It is 17 minutes after 4 o'clock on Downtown. Oh, yeah, we're talking jet airliners and more next on the program. Our next guest is a Pulitzer Prize-nominated journalist, a playwright, and the author of more than two dozen books, including The Ford Century and his newest, Higher, 100 Years of Boeing. We're pleased to welcome Russ Banham to Downtown. Russ, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
The book is absolutely fabulous, and anybody, I love history, so anything related to history, I can't wait to get enough of here. But when people hear it, they might say, I don't know, 100 years of Boeing, what would interest me in that? But this is, it's the history in many ways of all of aviation, but also mirrors a lot that's gone on in America over this last century.
Oh, indeed. I mean, one could look at the space race and many of our accomplishments in outer space and attribute them to Boeing and the companies it acquired along the way, McDonnell Douglas, Hughes Aircraft, Rockwell, and others. It's also, the history of our success in World War II, a war that many feel was won, in the air. And, of course, the two Boeing planes in particular, the B-17 and the B-29, were instrumental in winning that war. As well as some of Douglas's planes. So, yeah, you're right.
Well, and Bill Boeing is such a fascinating guy. And when we think of entrepreneurs today, we see a lot of people whose primary skill seems to be making money, and that's fine. But Bill Boeing came from that generation of people who made money because they were innovators. And it started with him deciding to put two pontoons on a boat, on a plane rather, out of Seattle, and turning that into this major industry.
Well, it's true. If you think about it, Kitty Hawk and the Wright brothers, it was only 12 years before Boeing started his company. As a boy, like many his age at the time, he'd read about the exploits of the Wright brothers and other early aviators, and he dreamed of someday having the opportunity to fly in a plane. And he tried that twice, the first time in Los Angeles. He went down there with some friends, got on a long line to be taken up, and missed his opportunity. But then in Seattle, on Lake Washington, he finally was able to fly. He was there with his best friend, Conrad Westervelt, who would become his first business partner. They both flew separately, and when Boeing landed, he turned to Conrad and said, "We could build a better plane." And you're right, it was that American can-do spirit that seemed to captivate him, and indeed the Wright brothers. It wasn't about the money. It was, like Sir Edmund Hillary with climbing Everest, it just because it's there, I want to tackle that enormous goal and see what I can do. And he was quite successful early on, building those pontoon seaplanes. And then the business really took off during World War One. When World War One ended, fortunes fell flat, and Boeing had to return to making boats. He owned a small shipyard, in Seattle on Lake Union. Initially, he was a lumberman, which is how he got into the boat building business.
And while he did very well in the 1930s, it wasn't a smooth transition because the government stepped in and forced them to break up the company a little bit and not only recovered from that, but thrived really beginning with the war years and then along the way acquiring much of the competition.
That's correct. Yeah, many people, and myself included, are unaware that at one time the major aircraft manufacturers also owned the airlines, owned the engine manufacturers, and even the airports. And in Boeing's case, they owned United Airlines. Today's United Airlines. There was a piece of legislation by the government, antitrust legislation, broke up the industry. And when that happened, Bill Boeing actually, he quit. He was done. He had always felt that it was important for the manufacturers to own the airlines to, be able to earn enough income to further the developments of the aviation industry. And he was done. But you're right, during World War II, the company really took off. But it's a boom-bust industry, as I point out in the book. many times during the history of Boeing, it reached the brink of bankruptcy, perhaps most notably in the 1970s. In Seattle, there was a billboard. This is right after a massive layoff by Boeing due to a decline in both military orders of jet aircraft and the airline orders of passenger aircraft. And anyway, this billboard said, whoever leaves Seattle last, turn off the lights. Of course, today Seattle's booming and Boeing along with it.
We're talking with Russ Banham. His new book is called Higher, 100 Years of Boeing. And whether it's the involvement in the Saturn V rocket that helped the Apollo 11 make it to the moon, or the 747, the Dreamliner, there's been so much innovation through the years led by Boeing. What's been the most significant event in the history of the company's 100 years?
Oh, boy, that's a really tough question to respond to. I'll give my personal answer, which is Boeing, the company's response to the government's needs during World War II. So this is even prior to World War II. The government came to Boeing to lead the rest of the industry as sort of the master contractor in building military aircraft for our allies overseas. And again, this is pre-war. And then, of course, when the Pearl Harbor was bombed, Boeing stayed in that position and expertly drove the development of our wartime aviation needs. So it was put in charge of McDonnell Douglas, Hughes, North American Aviation, all the rest during World War II. And in fact, you know, two Boeing planes were dropped the atom bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of the war. So I think just it's I think that and then possibly after I think it was Apollo 3 burned on the launch pad, killing three astronauts, and the government again came to Boeing and said, we need your expertise in helping to fulfill President Kennedy's pledge to put a man on the moon before the end of the 1960s, and Boeing again filled sort of a master contractor role. Just extraordinary organizational capabilities, and indeed was responsible for building many components of the Apollo, many subsequent space missions, right through to the building of the International Space Station. Again, Boeing the master contractor for that project as well. So truly just a great American company that is, much like my earlier book, the 100-year history of Ford, the Ford Century, it's a company that's had an impact on the world, on our society, on, even today, a portion of the technology that's in our smartphones and in our computers were developed by Boeing and the heritage companies that it acquired along the way. These were for the government, either for military missions or for space missions. But that's where it all came from. And it was just a great privilege for me to be asked to, to write the company's history, and for Boeing to open its archives to me. I've got lots of stories in the book that have never before been revealed, lots of great photos. It's a great story right around the end of World War II, if you've got time.
Oh, sure.
I'll go quickly.
Absolutely.
Well, so the Nazis are in retreat. The war is nearly over, and Hitler has ordered the destruction of all the secret research facilities, particularly the aeronautical research facilities. And the Germans really had the aeronautical lead on the Allies. This facility was in Volkenrode, and General Hap Arnold put together a cadre of American aviation engineers and an aerodynamicist named George Scherer from Boeing. They went to Volkenrode, and the facility had not been destroyed. The superintendent loved the place and couldn't bear to destroy it, and he was the only one left there. It turned out one of the Americans was a German emigre he knew. They hugged, and the superintendent took him on a tour of the facility and mentioned that in a dry well outside were all these drawings, these papers that the scientists had tossed into the well, right before they left. And so they hauled up, all these documents, and in there were drawings for the first swept back wing, swept wing jet aircraft. Now, up until this point, it was only one jet. It was the de Havilland, and it was T-shaped, you know, like a cross. And these, you know, the wings we see today that are swept back. And the Germans had this research. George Scherer, the aerodynamicist, of course, realized the import of that type of jet, dashed off a 7-page letter, put it in an envelope, marked it censored, sent it to Seattle, and basically said, stop the presses. We're going to begin research into this kind of jet. And that jet became the first in the 7 series, the 707. Up until that time, Douglas was the preeminent maker of passenger aircraft. With the 707 jet, Boeing surpassed it and, you know, has never looked back.
Well, some wonderful stories in the book.
Thanks to a dry well left by the Nazis.
The great access that you got, not only the stories and the files that you were given access to, but the photos in this. Now, Russ, you've written about some great companies. You mentioned Ford. You've done the history of Coors Brewing as well. Are there some similarities between these companies that enabled them to be so successful?
Yeah, you know, I'll say, you know, all of them had a visionary founder who was intent on doing something good for the rest of us. Wasn't necessarily going after, you know, I'm going to make money. I mean, look at Henry Ford. He's this inveterate tinkerer, would take apart watches as a child, put them back together again. You know, he wanted a way to build a car that would be affordable to all of us, you know, to the masses. And that's, you know, that's what he put his gifts toward. You know, in the case of Coors, too, you had Adolf Coors, who was a stowaway on a ship to America, made his way across the country to Golden, Colorado. He was a master brewer as a boy in Germany, and you know, decided he was going to build this small brewery. And and much like Ford, another family-owned company, now, of course, we've seen mergers with Miller's and with Molson, but when I wrote that book about a dozen years ago, it's still owned by the Coors family. The third generation was running it. So I think, you know, in all those cases, you had, you know, this visionary founder who would then hire people of the same ilk, people who shared in that mission, who had the same work ethic as the founder. And then they went out and hired people of that same ilk. And then what's born from that is a culture. You know, it's a term we use indiscriminately today, you know, the workplace culture. Well, that culture begins with the founder of an organization. And in all my books, I've learned that you can, there's sort of weaved throughout the history those traits that defined the person who founded the business.
Now, before we let you go, Russ, we do have to ask a little bit about your previous life and what memories you have from making the movie Meatballs with Bill Murray back in 1978-79.
You know, I could write 100 books, and my obituary will read Meatballs co-star dead at, you know, 98.
I hope so, yeah.
my graduate degrees are in playwriting. I hope to become a playwright, and very early on, I was reading plays with other playwrights, and I was, you know, essentially discovered as an actor, a career I never really thought about. And next thing you know, I was acting off-Broadway and on-Broadway in motion pictures and television series. And anyway, I did Meatballs, you're right. I had a third billing in that film with Bill Murray, his first film. We shot it for 6 weeks in northern Ontario in Canada. Bill was a veritable unknown. I think he had just finished 1 year on Saturday Night Live. Truly a very unusual gentleman. I'll tell you right now, he cheats at poker, but you can't catch him. That's how good he is at it. An extraordinary wit, a rare kind of wit, a huge heart, you know, a wonderful man throughout, but really one of a kind. And it was a great, great privilege for me to spend that much time 6 weeks up there. We actually we shot it at a summer camp, and then we lived at a an old sort of Catskills-like resort. I'm sure you've got examples of that up your way. And you know, basically, it was a lodge and these bungalows, and we all lived in the bungalows, and we would gather every night. I mean, in the middle of nowhere, northern Ontario, we would gather in the lodge and play poker. And Bill turned me on to drinking Remy Brandy. That was his brand at the time. So So it's great fun. Amazing, one's accidental life, right?
Absolutely.
How you go from meatballs to writing the history of Boeing.
Well, it's a wonderful book. Russ Banham, his new book, it's absolutely beautiful, meticulously researched. 100 Years of Boeing, Higher, the name of the book. Russ Banham, good luck with it. Thank you so much for making time for us this afternoon.
It was my pleasure. I enjoyed it very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. It's 4:32 here.